Chapter 13. Foreign lands may be conquered by different methods and in different stages, militarily, economically, culturally. Cultural conquest can be the natural result of a people embracing a more appealing set of ideals. This may involve little or no violence and may be a good or bad thing, of course, depending upon your point of view and whether your beliefs and principles are coming into or going out of fashion. Fabian socialists, for example, are a notably patient bunch who, while not averse to military and economic violence, are quite content to pursue over many generations their quest for a complete cultural conquest of original American ideals. But cultural conquest is far too tedious and time-consuming to satisfy the greedy egomaniacs who think in military or corporate terms. Economic conquest or control of any country by corporate interests must be enforced or guaranteed at some level by the threat of military violence. One could even make a case that America herself is little more than a nation of tax slaves to a corporate interest known as the United States of America, and that, along with massive disinformation, ignorance, and apathy, it is, after all, the American military that enforces this sad reality upon its own people. What else could explain a people who fancy themselves as free, yet allow half of what they do every day to be taxed away in one form or another? Compared to economic conquest, actual military conquest is crude, expensive, and far more risky for would-be imperialists. When a military force conquers a foreign land, enslaves its people, and suppresses its culture, resentment and hatred percolate for generations. Invaders always face the prospect of being violently overthrown and tossed out. How do people really know what is behind a war? Does anyone believe a government will tell the truth about what is precipitating a war? History does not support such a belief, does it? Does the media have the courage to tell the truth or even to dig for the truth when it is politically dangerous? Time and again, years after people have stopped caring what really took place or why, new information surfaces that completely changes the reality upon which people base their opinions and decisions when it really mattered. Does the media ever express regret that they got it wrong? Has the media ever admitted getting it wrong? Major wars, world wars, cannot happen without the blessing of the only people having the political influence and financial resources to make it happen. These people usually come from long lines of movers and shakers, sometimes referred to in conspiracy circles as the elite. They may or may not be government leaders. They are not typically stupid or reckless people, or they would not be able to hold on to the wealth and power they possess. These people understand that war itself, win or lose, can be immensely profitable in the short term, even if a bit risky. The chief benefit and goal of war is to crush one's economic competition, expand one's sphere of influence, and install oneself as the lender of last resort, or only resort, to winners and losers alike, all of whom will need financing to rebuild after the devastation of military conflict. This is the real organized crime family, the real mob. Most war, as we think of it, is allowed to unfold to gain an economic advantage. That type of war can be managed within reasonable limits. The conduct and outcome of such wars can be negotiated in a relatively civil manner because the folks behind the scenes, although willing to risk a great deal, are usually not crazy. They carefully calculate the odds at each critical juncture they have no qualms about thinning out the population, but serious qualms when it comes to wiping themselves out economically. They, quote, know when to hold 'em and know when to fold 'em, unquote, so to speak. We're not talking about politicians and generals here, but rather those who buy and sell, make and break the politicians and generals. When violence erupts over principles and defense of a belief system or way of life, civilized conduct and negotiated outcomes are far less likely. Some people believe that their Creator gave them a responsibility to resist evil, even if they have virtually no chance militarily, economically, or even in the marketplace of ideas. One of the greatest dangers to mankind in the 21st century is the disregard of, and indeed contempt for, such peoples on the part of Western multinational corporate capitalism and the governments whose military establishments protect its interests. In their day-to-day lives, in their immediate physical environment, most Americans have no discernible enemies. It is always possible that there could be governments and other organizations that pose a genuine physical threat to the American people. However, it is virtually impossible for the people to know this for themselves. They must depend almost entirely upon information provided by government and the mainstream media. In all of human behavior, what can be more serious than supporting acts of violence against people in faraway places, or for that matter, at home? Is there not a profound moral responsibility to be absolutely sure of both the accuracy and urgency of the situation before perpetrating acts of death and destruction upon other human beings? How difficult does this become when one is at the mercy of sources of information that cannot be verified? What if those sources have lied to you at other times and on other issues, and you know it? What if both intuition and available facts tell you that your government has not only been lying to you, but may have been involved in creating the very danger it now says will require the use of violence? Is it morally justifiable to support your government's acts of violence against people anywhere when, number one, you are not in immediate physical danger? Number two, you feel strongly that you cannot trust your government? And number three, you have no way to verify the information the government is providing as its excuse for violence. Throughout the history of so-called civilized societies, rulers and governments and official information sources have provided innocent civilians with patriotic, heart-swelling, tear-jerking pretexts for hating and killing and conquering the enemy. It is appalling how easily government and the media manage to convince a majority of the people that such and such a country or such and such a people constitutes some kind of dire threat to national security or the national interests and must be attacked. People buy into this or go along with it or ignore it, even when they themselves cannot verify one shred of evidence to confirm the government's claims. Does ignorance equate to innocence? Should civilians be considered innocent because of their ignorance of what happened, what's happening, and what's going to happen? There is an interesting little problem with the word ignorance. Ignorance is a condition. The word is the noun form of the verb ignore, which Webster's New World Dictionary defines as follows. 1. To disregard deliberately, pay no attention to, refuse to consider. Somewhere along the line, popular usage decided to stop treating ignorance as a willful condition. A society's language evolves based upon its mutually influencing values, attitudes, and behaviors, does it not? What are some of the attitudes, values and behaviors in Western society that minimize or eliminate any sense of responsibility. Hedonism, materialism, narcissism, hypocrisy, certainly all of these. But moral relativism has to be number one. No one is responsible for their behavior. A perfectly good reason exists for everything people do. And if there is any responsibility, it falls upon society as a whole or some dark archetype that only science may one day harness by unraveling the human genome, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line, there is no such thing as responsibility. And an ignorant civilian is, therefore, an innocent civilian. If ignorance is to be considered willful, then ignorance of the law is no excuse indeed. If ignorance is indeed an innocent condition, then ignorance of the law is the ultimate excuse. If law is too vague, convoluted, voluminous, or deceptive to even be knowable, then weak people will scurry around pretending to obey it. Average people will ignore it. Brave people will resist it. Great people will attack it. When government is drumming up support for campaigns of violence, it typically spreads information that will alarm people so they will support the government. Typically, people have little choice but to accept the government's word, even when the information makes no sense or is hard to believe. Keep in mind, most people are already somewhat intimidated by their own government. In an atmosphere of uncertainty and alleged threats, average people just cave in and not only condone, but enthusiastically support violence by their government against whomever their government proclaims to be the bad guys. Only brave people will resist the will of a lying, threatening government. Great people who resist mad or evil government have a fair chance of being murdered by that government if it is not overthrown. To commit or support actual violence against other people based solely upon vague fears or unproved suspicions that they could or might be a threat would seem to be the very definition of paranoia. If those fears or suspicions are based upon unverifiable information from sources known to be suspect, then involvement in or support of such violence would seem irresponsible and unprincipled at best, cowardly and faithless, perhaps. How Christian is a society that is willing to bomb women and children of another culture on the pretext that their leaders may pose a threat, when that very pretext is being supplied by the known liars who have provable conflicts of interest? Who is an innocent civilian in such a society?